Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we're joined again by the perennial one and only.
I was going to call you a special guest, but I think...
You're just a guest at this point, Craig.
Sorry, man, you lost the special tag.
You've outstayed your special.
Yeah.
Craig Blanchett on the show today. Hey, Craig, how's it going, buddy?
What's up, guys?
So we brought Craig in, A, because we wanted to play Commander after we podcast today, and B, because we're doing a topic today that, two topics that in this recording session that Craig will be instrumental to helping contribute some deep wisdoms. I'm putting you on the spot, Craig, sorry.
Yeah, I love green, and then we're doing EDH etiquette afterwards. So.
Yeah, it's going to be a good 1-2 punch. It's a good week. It's a good week for stuff.
Well, and also we did the top 10 green cards last week, and we got a lot of response, and hopefully, I know people were tweeting at us a lot, like, why wasn't this card on there, and why wasn't that card on there, and hopefully you went to the comment section on Rocket Jump and put your top 10 list in the comment section, because for one, it's a lot easier to just yell out a card that we didn't name than it is to actually make a list, because as soon as you start making the list, you realize, oh, that card that I mentioned is good. But which of these other 10 awesome cards do I take off the list to put that on for? Yeah. So, and I'm not saying we were 100% right.
I think I definitely whiffed on not having Sylvan Library, that's for sure. It's like green doesn't have card draw otherwise.
It's a tough nut to crack, green, but
it's true.
We were talking about this before the cast.
A lot of epic cards.
And of course, my number one card on the list of top 10 green cards is the green card that is the most blue. Of any card.
It's true.
It's not green at all. It's card draw, and then you pay life for cards. So if anything, it's
blue-black. Blue. It's control. So, it's very bizarre.
Anyway, well, talking of, you know, that's kind of about the color pie, and we're going to talk a little bit about that on this episode, or a lot about it, actually.
A lot about it, because today's episode is a new series we're doing about the color pie / color wheel. And we're going to be airing these episodes sort of paired up with the rest of the top 10 cards in each color. So we haven't done, black and...
Blue.
Blue, yeah, and multicolored. We've done everything else, including artifacts. So when we do those, we'll also do a color wheel series on that. So let's just jump right into it. The color wheel series... Actually, let's just go back a bit. So the granddaddy of Magic the Gathering is Richard Garfield. He made the game... 20 plus years ago now.
His name is still on the back of the card, correct?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And he based the game sort of on his philosophies towards five different colors and what they represented and how they would interact. And we now call that the color wheel or the color pie. It's a circle. That's what matters.
If you look on the back of a Magic card, there's the colors form
a pentagon. Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things you can tell about the color wheel from that pentagon. For one, it has all five colors on it. Also, when you look at it, you can see which colors are allied with the other colors because the ones right next to each color are allied. And you can see which ones are enemies because the ones across from each other are enemies.
Craig just handed a Iona Shield of Emeria to Josh to look at the back of the card. And I just gave Josh a land and said, like, Craig, what are you doing?
Josh's hands are filthy.
He just had Taco Bell.
What if he accidentally sneezes? And also, or just gets mad and rips it.
Yeah, that has happened.
I didn't actually realize it was Iona because he just handed it to me upside down.
I know. I saw while I'm sitting across from Josh and my eyes went.
Yeah. I was like, what is Jimmy freaking out about?
Yeah.
He's like,
I feel like Magic cards are kind of like the Island of Misfit toys. Like they want to be played with. You
they
know
do.
What I mean? They,
inside
they want
a nice protective sleeve.
Jimmy, of course, he's probably like shocked you didn't double sleeve it.
Yeah, exactly.
Craig's on the not double sleeve team. I can see.
Sometimes
which...
things are better on sleeve, you know.
But some of Craig's decks are double sleeved.
Inappropriate.
So he's Craig is a hypocrite.
Okay, so let me just make correction already before somebody gets mad at us. There, Richard Garfield's name is not on the back.
Oh, you're right. When you said that, I was like,
but they did
is
copyright
it?
That that pattern, and it's very, very tight copyright or trademark.
Oh, on the color wheel?
On the color wheel and the purple oval on the outline.
Oh, interesting.
And the colors of the Magic the Gathering. Mm.
It would make sense because you're just trying to get no one to counterfeit it, obviously, so you'd want to trademark it as heavily as possible.
I mean, one little aside note is that the back of the Magic card is sort of like stuck in 1994,
yeah.
Because you can't create a new back for it because then you won't be able to mix the cards unless you want to require everybody to have to sleeve, which they're hesitant to do. So they're sort of stuck with this thing, and it also says Deckmaster on the back because...
Yeah.
Originally, Wizards of the Coast was going to be doing a bunch of different card games, and they had one called Jihad, which turned into Vampire the Masquerade, mm-hmm. and they did a few others that they tried, but those never took off. So the Deckmaster thing, if you ever wondered why the heck is that on the back of the card, that's why, because it was going to be a whole line of card games, but then none of them lasted.
Anyway. Jumping back to your comment about how they never could change it, they, from what I understand, they thought about changing it around the M10 time mm-hmm. to that yellow writing. But obviously decided against it for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
I know Rosewater has talked about wanting to change it and just the difficulties involved with it. And it still could happen at some point.
And the card looks fine, honestly, from the back. And
yeah, it has like an old book feel, which is what it was supposed to. I mean, it is... There are some things
about it.
Nostalgic
to me.
Yeah. I mean, once you've looked at it enough, it's just whatever. You know, you don't really think about what's
And how often are we even looking at the back of the card?
Very, just in draft, really.
Yeah, so...
So anyway, the most important part right now about the back of these cards is that they have the five colors arranged in a pentagonal shape, and Richard Garfield arranged them in this specific order so that the neighbors to the colors would have a related philosophy to the color next to it. So, and they would have an opposite philosophy from the color across from it. So we're going to talk about green.
That's called
today.
Allied colors and enemy colors.
Correct. So, Josh, what are a few words that come to mind when you think about red in Magic?
Chaos, anger, damage.
Nice. And Craig, what are a few words that come to mind for blue in Magic?
Counter, negate, counter stuff.
Yeah, so essentially like...
Card draw.
Yeah, so those are nice opposites because red is fast and impulsive and blue is calculating and controlling. So.
Yeah, I would say cold also for blue and
exactly.
Hot for red.
Yeah, and so like the color pairs just naturally make sense, right? White and black, red, blue, and green and black. It sort of just makes sense from just looking at it. You can kind of figure out what it's about. So in Magic, the color wheel is integral to the mechanics, the strengths, the weaknesses, and like the flavor of the cards. And this series is going to break down each of Magic's colors. So we're going to talk about the color's history, examine sort of what its wants and needs are, and how it works with and without other colors. And we're doing all this so we can tie it together to understand its role in EDH and how you get to have the most fun with it.
It also like strategically helps you because, you know, EDH is such a huge format. We have so many cards available and, you know, it's nearly impossible to just know every card that somebody could possibly have.
Yeah.
There's just so many cards available in the pool that we've got for this format. So knowing the color pie really helps you know, like, okay, well, if he doesn't have blue open, he probably can't counterspell me. Or if he doesn't have blue in the deck, you know. And if he doesn't have red, then he probably can't do any direct damage to me. I mean, there are cards that do go outside of the color pie, but in general, you can make those assumptions. And so knowing the color pie inside and out really helps you strategically make decisions, even though you don't know every single card in the history of Magic.
Yeah. So this series is to help you learn what the strengths and weaknesses of each color is. So, you know, if you're facing like a mono red deck, obviously your enchantments are going to be relatively safe. Your lands, not so much. And that's why we brought in Craig. Craig, out of all of us, I think you've been playing Magic consistently for the longest period of time. right? You've been, I mean, you started collecting at a very young age, but you've been around the game for your entire life, and you've never at some point like really disappeared from it and come back, right?
There was a time around like college that I kind of disappeared for a little bit and, you know, late high school, but for the most part, like started playing when I was young in grade school and then got back into it when I came out to LA, met a kid that, kind of reintroduced me to Magic through EDH. And then from that, like I was so hooked. I started going to the card shop 5-6 nights a week, just playing EDH game after game after game, closing down the shop like every night. And,
it's
yeah,
an addiction.
I mean, we got a lot of games in, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah. You know, certainly different theories going around. You know, different people have different tactics. You know, different cards that they love playing, and different you know combos and stuff like that. So
yeah, you've definitely seen a lot, and so has Josh. I mean, you obviously played way back in the day as well.
Yeah, but I did take a longer break, so yeah. I bet Craig probably has more total years under his belt.
True.
I probably started at the very start and then have a big gap in the middle.
If you're an avid listener, you'll know that Josh will pretty consistently refer to a card that was like Alpha Unlimited and talk about it. So we're going to combine all these together, especially because I only knew about like three cards growing up, like Lightning Bolt, Fireball, and
of course they're all red cards, Jimmy.
Mountain, I guess, counts as a card I knew about.
Arabian Nights Mountain.
That's true. And I guess I also knew about Nightmare because I thought it was the coolest looking creature in the world when I started playing.
Also a sweet name.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That card was broken back in the day.
Yeah.
That card was expensive for a long time.
Yeah, I remember seeing that card and being like, I will own one day. And I have like five, and I'm just like, I hate this card.
And now it gets passed to me in a draft, and I don't pick it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it actually did get passed to me
Great in draft because you... Unless you're monocolored, you don't even want to play that card.
Yeah, exactly. We're also going to be helped out today by the incredibly important head designer at Wizards, Mark Rosewater, a.k.a. Morrow. He's been the head designer for the past 12 years at Wizards of the Coast. He runs a super talented design team, but really he's written like an encyclopedia of articles and recorded podcasts about the colors in Magic. So we'll be quoting him occasionally. And also all the articles that we read in preparation for this will be in the show notes. So if you guys want to read the full breakdown of all the colors, Morrow has a ton of insight, and he really knows what he's doing, and he really wants to abide by the color wheel, too.
I feel like Rosewater is really the guy that really like instituted how important the color pie is, because early Magic, the color pie was pretty willy-nilly.
Yeah, I mean, the Tim deck that we deck teched
Tim
is
would never be
a perfect example of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Tim would never be in blue now, and it's really... great for the game that Rosewater really latched on to this philosophy and has really held tightly to it. And it's one of the great things about Magic is just the color pie and how it works.
Yeah.
Maybe the single greatest thing about the game.
Not to mention the fact that the color pie is being abided to also really helps with the flavor. And Mark Rosewater talks about how those two are not necessarily independent of each other. And you can have great gameplay that is enhanced by the flavor and vice versa. And also at the very end of the day, we're just skimming the surface here. We could devote an entire podcast just to talking about Magic's colors. So there's going to be lots more to talk about in the future. So if we miss something, don't worry, guys. We will eventually get back to it, I'm sure.
They'll let us know if we do.
Yeah, you guys will let us know. So let's start off with the history of green. Did any of you guys play green when you were younger?
That was my first deck, which was unfortunate because green was really, really bad in early Magic.
Yeah.
But the way I started playing was my friends were playing. It was beta. I didn't own my own cards, but they did. And they just would... There was five of us, coincidentally. Mm-hmm. And there were five decks. Somebody was black. Somebody was white. And so they needed a fifth guy. They tried to get me in. And they literally handed me a green deck. And I think they probably handed it to me because it was the worst. But also, you know, I was...
Potentially the easiest to pilot as well.
Yeah, I was like 16 years old. And... Which now everybody knows how old I am. And
17, right? That was last year.
Yeah, no, that was only...
Give you an Omnath deck and you went to town.
And the reason green was bad early Magic was because it's creature-based, and creatures in early Magic were really, A, bad, and B, really easy to get rid of. So the removal just far outstripped what the creatures were capable of. We didn't have Enter the Battlefield effects and things like that. So, you know, you just put out like a 6-6 creature and somebody that costs you 6 mana and somebody kills it with a terror for 2 mana, and then that's just horrible for you. So so I'm very familiar with green and early Magic.
Yeah, and green is probably Craig's most played color in your EDH decks.
Well, for one, Infect.
Yeah,
which
Infect.
We've talked about many times. Craig is our Infect player in our group. What, how many Infect decks do you have?
I was just looking at them today. I think there's eight.
Eight? That's Infect EDH decks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and in order to have an Infect deck in EDH, you pretty much have to have green in it.
Yeah. Green and black.
Yeah, the ones
two.
That don't have it really aren't that great.
Well, the whole point is pushing through damage to kill someone, and green is very good at adding a little bit of extra damage. So green historically, of course, has been known to be the color for big creatures, stompy dudes, and things that will just like hit you in the head until you die. Like very hard. It's like we want to trample over you. We want to run over you.
Yeah, trample is sort of the flagship green mechanic since the beginning. And then mana ramp. Even since the beginning,
oh yeah,
green was the color that could get you sort of a lot of mana quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would be ahead on mana.
As early as turn two, usually.
Yeah, it was just the color. I mean, back then they had Moxes and Sol Ring and stuff, but, you know, it still had Wild Growth and Fast Bond, a card that's banned that allows you to play as many lands as you can. So that was another very powerful card. Channel, which, again, a banned card, one of the most powerful cards of all time. That's two green for a sorcery, and it allows you to pay one life and add one colorless to your mana pool. So actually, if people don't know, the channel fireball.com is actually named after one of the very first wombo combos in Magic's history, because if you cast channel and then you cast a fireball, then you can just pay enough life to kill them.
Yep.
And there was
you could Black
the
Lotus.
First turn Black Lotus.
Yeah, exactly. If you first turn Black Lotus, then you have exactly four mana, and you can pay exactly 19 life, and you can kill them before they've even taken a turn. So that was just one of the early... In fact, that was probably a big reason why they created what was called the Restricted List, which made a list of cards that you were only allowed to have one of in your deck.
Right.
So Channel was on that, Black Lotus was on that, Fireball wasn't, but anyway.
Anyway, Mark Rosewater has a quote that says, each color's view of the world is heavily influenced by the thing it values most. And so what does green value most in this case? It would be nature. So nature is like the defining aspect of green. There's no force more powerful or peaceful or abundant than nature. So growth is at the heart of green, and it's a huge part of what green is about. Like, let's talk about some of green's most iconic cards, like Llanowar Elves is the essence of sort of the first sort of mana creature. You pop it out, it's a one green for a 1/1 elf, and you can tap it for mana. Giant Growth, like in Wild Growth, like we were talking about, and of course, notice how the word growth is everywhere.
Yeah, Giant Growth is kind of the... You know, early on in Magic, again, every Lightning Bolt is in this cycle where everybody had a one mana instant that did something. And Lightning Bolt was reds and Giant Growth is greens. And you can see just from that card what the color pie is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So red's doing a lot of damage in an efficient amount.
And number three is very important because it's one mana for an effect that usually has three.
Three, yeah. I mean, blue got Ancestral Recall, draw three cards, so blue wins. But greens was make a creature big.
Yeah, +3/+3 instant combat trick.
So that tells you a lot about what the color pie for green was early on.
And what green has evolved to, because obviously if it was just these things, it would be a very simple game. Green has evolved into a color that loves to grow and hates sort of all things artificial. And notably, their enemy pair is blue, and we're going to talk about that later. But first, let's talk about the strengths and weaknesses of the color of green. So to make the color wheel actually work, each color has to be balanced. And this is probably the most important part of making Magic work, is why it's such a great game, is because like the nuances and the edges that designers create within the confines of the balance is why the game is so great. So Magic has, from its roots, evolved into a super strategic and very layered game because of all the little things that have been put in there to make a color have both strengths and weaknesses. So in the big picture, in the color pie slash wheel, you have to balance the inherent strengths of a color with its weaknesses. So we've already talked about some of the strengths. Let's start with like what the moral compass of green is. They care about life, growth, nature, community, spiritualism, notably not religion, but green's neighbor white sort of has that covered. But sort of devotion to like Mother Nature, Gaia, you know, whatever you want to call it. So in game, this means you get large creatures, mana ramp, pump spells, notably artifact and enchantment removal, because if you think about what green's all about, They're about nature, and there's a spell called Naturalize, which is let's destroy this man-made thing because we want to return to our roots.
Anything that's causing something to like keep nature down.
Yeah.
So like an enchantment would
be a
magical way to sort of change what the natural order of things. And an artifact is a man-made thing that's sort of changing the natural order of things. And so green naturally sort of rails against that.
Yeah, and it has the ability to remove it. So that's what, in terms of like gameplay, that's one of green's best things is the fact that you can remove artifacts and enchantments. And that is a huge part of it. There's also life gain, token generation, and green actually, I think, for hating enchantments and being able to blow them up, has some of the best enchantments in the game. Because, you know, green likes to weave its own, you know, it's doubling season.
Yep.
It is natural. It's just the season where things are doubled.
Some other strengths would be, while green believes in death, it believes in things coming out of death. So if you think of like the floor of a jungle and how, you know, things die, you know, creatures fight each other and one of them dies, but what happens is it decays. And from that decay, like other like bugs feed on it and scavengers come and then new plants grow from that. And so what one of the things green believes in is that yes, death happens, but from death we can, you know, maybe grow a creature. That's why there's a lot of cards like Scavenging Ooze, which, you know, you remove things from a graveyard and it gets bigger, or there's other cards that you remove creatures from graveyards and make a creature come out like oozes and things like that. And so green does believe in sort of this natural process of birth and rebirth.
Yeah. Very true. Pattern of Rebirth is a card we'll probably talk about later, a card that Craig introduced me to.
Yeah, it believes in from death comes more life.
Yeah, instead of from death is just death is death.
Right.
Which is black is definitely in that color.
Well, no, I think death is, that's what black and green share, is this idea that from death something can occur. Now,
yeah, it's true.
Black's going to make an abomination out of it. Blue is the color that thinks, okay, once something's dead, it's kind of dead.
Yeah, and that's actually something we'll talk about when we talk about the allied and enemy colors. And that's why I think black-green is, I think, one of my favorite two-color combinations because of how they, how the designers of the game have turned it into something else. So let's talk about green's weaknesses. So what is green not like? We have, you just have to look towards the opposite colors in the color pile. So if you're looking at your magic card, the two opposite colors to green are blue and black. Now, black is all about death, decay, illusions, or illusions actually more green, but like artificial growth is something that black and blue both share a lot in common, and also like the parasitic nature of what black does, sort of like mind rot, leeching onto you, stealing life, that
sort
of stuff.
Yeah, the calculating aspects of those colors, I think, are what green doesn't like. So, you know, whereas blue and black are going to draw cards, you know, blue's going to pay mana for it, red, black's going to pay life for it, your life total. If green's going to draw cards, it's going to do it by sacrificing a creature, because from death comes more life. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of, I think, a good way to show how they do the same thing, but they do it in their own way.
Yeah, some cards that do that are like Soul Renewal. No, it's something...
Lifeblood Hydra.
Yeah.
The one that you were talking about earlier.
Greater Good.
Greater Good, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the idea of, getting rid of something that is on your table for more instead of paying life like black does or mana like blue does. What does this mean in-game?
As far as the death thing?
Oh, I was just thinking about what green can't do because...
It also can't... It's not good at just reaching out and destroying creatures.
Yeah.
It doesn't believe in, you know, just killing something for no reason. See... If you're going to kill something, then it wants more life to come from it. It doesn't want to reach out and just lightning bolt something. You know, that's why lightning, which is a natural occurring thing in real life, but it's not part of the green's color pie. What green would do is it would say, oh, I've got a creature, you've got a creature. Let's see in a Darwinian fashion which one of them will survive and which one of them won't. So it's a survival of the fittest, sort of an evolutionary, you know, tact rather than, you know, an outside force literally coming in and destroying a creature. So it doesn't like, you know, if that's really green's biggest weakness, I would say, is the inability to directly remove creatures.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have great big board wipes. It doesn't really have, spot removal. There's a few.
And it can kill flyers specifically a lot of the time, but it's always conditional. So green never has that unconditional, like... you just kill a creature, you know, like which black has.
We didn't talk about, which is another weakness, is that green sort of has become traditionally not flyers.
Yeah.
Like to the point where like they just don't have any.
Unless it's a dragon.
I mean, when I say that, I mean like in general, in most sets, like green just doesn't get a flyer and it has trouble dealing with them. And that's one of the weaknesses of a color is mm-hmm. that it they're sort of stuck to the forest floor, if you will. Yeah. They do have reach. So green is the color of reach and the color of spiders and the things that can sort of, they're on the ground, but they can deal with flyers a little bit.
Yeah. Sandstep Mastodon.
Yeah, that's which, why does that have, it's just so damn big.
It's just so huge, yeah. It's like
trunk can antlers. Reach up there.
Yeah, essentially. It's just plucking things out of the sky. Yeah, so green can't fly. Their creation is like limited to organic things. They'll make tokens of oozes and stuff. They're not making like little mirrors. You know, they're not making artifact-based stuff, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in like what you're saying earlier, green's removal is through a fight spell. You know, that's how they do it, is they choose this creature to just freaking beast it out with another dude. And if whatever one wins, wins.
Yeah, they're very survival of the fittest. That's a big part of what green is and what the philosophy of green is.
Yeah. All right. Now let's delve deep. Let's talk about how green plays with other colors, because that's what's most important in EDH. Allied and enemy colors. So we just talked about this already. Allied colors are the colors that are next to the color in the pentagon. So in this case, white and red. And the colors that are opposite are the enemy colors, so blue and black. Let's talk about how these guys function in EDH. You're always given the option to play more than one color, right? And why do we do that? So our decks are more balanced, so we don't have the inherent weaknesses there.
Right, and we've talked about each color has strengths and weaknesses. So how do you cover the weakness of a color?
Mm-hmm.
Because the color itself can't cover its own weakness. That's the whole thing. So you need to pair it with something else that doesn't have the same weakness, so that ideally the strength of green is covering for the weakness of another color and that other color's strength is covering green's weakness.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's why mono decks are just very tough, because there's just going to be certain things in the game that a mono deck doesn't have really any way to deal with or has very few ways to deal with.
Yeah. Like we talked, red trying to blow up enchantments, not really happening anytime.
Yeah, so there's only a few cards red has access to.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's a couple artifacts, and there's just not very many ways to do what red's bad at.
Yeah.
And in this case, green, you know, again, a mono green deck's going to have trouble with creatures with utility because it can't reach out and get them very easily, and also just board wiping. It just doesn't have a really good way to just like hit the reset button, which in EDH is so important because there's so many players.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you have to run artifact-based stuff that doesn't.
Yep.
And if you're being a true Vorthosi guy, you wouldn't even do that if you're playing mono green, would you?
And green also doesn't really have good ways to deal with a sorcery or an instant somebody's casting, you know, mm-hmm. whereas blue could counter that, you know, and white might redirect it.
Green, red might double it.
Yeah, red might make its own copy of it and throw it back at you. You know, green doesn't really, it's just going to be like, well, you cast your spell, dude. I hope I can withstand it. You know, that's sort of green. It's stalwart. You know, it's like, I'll take it in the chest and hopefully my creature's big enough or I've got enough life or, you know, I'm going to hit you on the backswing hard enough that it's like, I'll take your best shot and then can you take mine?
Yeah, they're very much toughness matters. Like, they are giant trees. These are the beasts of the world. You know, these are the guys that are sitting there, the god of the hunt. You know, it's all about making wolf tokens and stuff and other just beastly guys.
Well, one other thing we didn't mention as a strength of green is it's a death touch color.
Oh, right.
So that's another thing that green does really well, is that it has this idea that in nature, right, like a plant might kill you because it might just be poisonous, you know, mm-hmm. if you eat the wrong plant, or, you know, a spider that's teeny tiny, the size of your thumb, might take down a crater hoof behemoth because it's poisonous, you know. So that's another thing. And then regeneration is another big green thing that we didn't talk about.
Yep.
Green, again, green and black share this, but green's idea of, like, you can heal, you can regenerate, you know. So
yeah, you are of the earth and you will be recovered from it as well.
Yep.
So let's talk about some enemy pairs. And these, of course, I looked at all of Mark Rosewater's articles. He has some very in-depth writing. I think he actually has two articles for each of these pairings. First off, we've got Golgari, which is green and black. And this is like the quintessential life versus death sort of argument. Putrefy is a really good example of what this is. It's destroy target artifact or creature. And so the fact that it says creature is
that's
huge.
The black part.
Yeah, that's the black part. And also it can't be regenerated, which is something that Mark Rosewater talked about. It's like regeneration is what these two colors actually share, is that they're both resilient to death.
Right.
In different ways. Like green is all about regenerating, literally regenerating, and black is all about, you know, I'm going to take this and make an abomination, or, you know, I'm going to get out of this somehow with some my dark magics. Of course, we're going to try and mention a commander in each of these. So one of my favorites is Jerod Golgari Lich Lord. Have you guys ever played against this guy?
Doesn't I think D has a Jirad deck, right?
Yeah, D's got a Jirad deck. And this really just...
So yes, I've seen it because he's been bashing me in the face sometimes.
So these essentially make a lot of sense because you get to read these cards, and he's got Golgari in his name. So he's black, black, green, green for a 2/2 legendary zombie elf. He gets +1/+1 for each creature card in your graveyard. So that's, he's a lord, but that also is a combination of what black and green both like, which is interaction with the graveyard in a certain way.
Yep.
And he has for one, a black and a green, sacrifice another creature. Each opponent loses life equal to the sacrificed creature's power. So that's, I mean, tied almost directly into what we were talking about earlier.
Well, right, because green likes to sacrifice stuff and have something come from it. So black subverts that. So instead of life coming from it, damage comes from it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very, very, very flavorful, very cool, and totally within what these two colors should be doing.
Yeah, and he also has sacrifice a swamp and a forest, return Jirad from your graveyard to your hand.
He's a fantastic EDH card.
Yep.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
He's got so much utility in general, and the fact that you don't have to tap him to do the sacrifice effect is pretty nice as well.
You can do his ability as an instant at any time, even immediately after you cast him, because you don't have to tap him for it.
Yeah, exactly. And one last thing that Mark mentioned about Golgari that I thought was really interesting is that it grows vertically. So it's focused on one creature as opposed to making like a billion tokens. Like black and green is like, no, we're going to put +1/+1 counters on this specific guy and grow him to be huge. So it's growing vertically, not horizontally.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, these articles are great. I sat there and was like, I could just do an entire episode about Golgari if I wanted to, because it's so much.
Maybe someday we will.
Maybe someday we will. Let's talk about the other enemy pair. And I
my
think,
favorite one is next.
Yes, it's my favorite too, actually, I've come to realize. I think if I had to be my color pie for my like who I am as a player is probably Teemer, because this color pairing is in there.
Mine is literally green and blue.
Oh, great. What's it called?
It's called Simic.
Simic.
Yeah, because, well, it's mostly blue for me, but then the, my... Well, and this, of course, goes to what we're always saying about EDH, which is what are the two most important things that every deck needs? And it's card draw and mana ramp.
Yep.
And blue's card draw and green's mana ramp. So, of course, those are my two favorite colors.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Also, the colors of a card named Prophet of Crucifix.
Yes.
Just thought we should mention the greatest card of all time.
And what is the Prophet of Crucifix? So it's a Seedborn Muse crossed with a Leyline of Anticipation. So it's just literally a green card and a blue card put together.
Yeah. AKA, what a great card. Simic is... So this is what we talked about earlier for nature versus nurture. Like, blue is about artifacts, about teaching yourself that you can become whatever you want. You know, in life, the knowledge is there for you to grab. You know, you draw your cards, you figure it out. Green is like, look, if you're born to be a freaking tree, you're a tree. It's not a bad thing. It's part of the whole, you know, you're not going to be anything more than the tree, so don't go around trying to
be. You'll die and become something else.
You might grow into a bigger tree.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But you won't suddenly turn into a, you know, into a bird.
Yeah.
You know, but blue is totally like, if you're born a tree and you want to become a bird, we can help you make that happen.
Yeah, why not?
Or we can at least make you look like a bird. You know, maybe you won't actually be one if somebody really scratches beneath the surface.
Yeah,
you
that, know? That's definitely true. That's why blue has cards like Phyrexian Metamorph or Phantasmal Image, Vesuvian Doppelganger, all these sort of copy effects.
In some ways, this color pairing is the most opposite that you can get as far as with green. Because black and green do share a lot of aspects, but green and blue don't really.
Yeah.
You know, there are obviously certain things, but I think this is probably much harder from a design standpoint than the Golgari was.
Yeah, it would seem to make a lot of sense, because green and black actually, they kind of do share a lot in common, even though they are enemy colors, and it's a lot of fun to design around
that
standpoint.
They at least have death in common, and they deal with death. Now, they deal with it differently, but what is blue and green, what do they have in common that they deal with differently? It's they're almost like philosophically, diametrically opposed.
Yeah. Well, I guess the forest needs some rain occasionally. so it's sort of the nature versus nurture. Blue is all about nurturing. You can become whatever you want. You know, dream big. Welcome to, you know, freedom, baby. Do whatever you want. And
welcome
green,
to the jungle.
Yeah. Blue is like tabula rasa, right? It's like the blank slate. You write your own destiny on it.
You can become anything you can dream of. It's sort of the American dream. And whereas green is the color of, you know, you're born and you follow your instincts. And, you know, if you're born a tiger in the jungle, then you're going to hunt deer. And that's what you're going to do.
You're going to do it super well, though, because that's your destiny, buddy.
But you're not going to make a plan for becoming the president of all tigers.
That's true.
You know, you're not going to... All right, that's it.
Beastmaster Ascension.
Beastmaster Ascension, that's true. One
that's
card,
the president of all tigers. President Beastmaster.
President Beastmaster. Not enough of us have attacked today. He's like, well, you better attack until I'm
better
ready
get
to
get seven
go.
Of them.
Yeah. He's just sitting there waiting to power up the entire time.
Attack a few more times and the president's coming out.
One of the cards I wanted to talk about is this funny card called Overbeing of Myth, which is like the ultimate original Timmy green card plus just what blue is, and it's 5 total mana, and it's just hybrid blue green the entire time, and it's a star spirit avatar, and its power and toughness are equal to the number of cards in your hand, which is totally like Gaia's Liege kind of card from the past, and then at the beginning of your draw step, draw a card. So it's literally the two combinations of the
it's
card.
It's perfect because
it's exactly it.
What is blue cares about brain power and how smart you are, and that's signified in Magic by the amount of cards in your hand, because that's the amount of smarts you've got, right?
Yeah.
And then what does green care about? It cares about growing. And so if I'm growing smarter, then I'm actually physically growing stronger.
Yeah, so the card rewards you for keeping the cards you draw from it because it becomes bigger because of it.
Yep. Pretty cool.
Yeah, very
cool.
Not
a great card, but
not a great
card.
Yeah, very cool. It's also incredibly hard to cast.
Yes. I mean, you would have to be in pure Simic, I don't think. Well, it's not going in any 5-color deck, I can tell you
that's true. And, of course, the legendary creature we'll talk about is, unless you guys have a better one, I was going to say the Prophet of Crucifix, but I realize she is not a commander.
If she was, it'd be so broken.
Womp womp. Yeah, same mana cost, though. Momer Vig, Simic Visionary. I'd love to see people build this deck, because this deck can get pretty busted pretty fast.
I think BDM was talking about he has a very strong Momir Vig deck. Yeah.
Clearly BDM, a man of entertaining lots of value there.
This has card draw and tutoring on it. So and again, a thing we forgot to talk about in Strengths of Green. One of the strengths of green is the ability to find a specific creature. So it doesn't tutor for anything, but it can really, really well tutor for a creature, you know, specifically. So Birthing Pod, Survival of the Fittest, Fauna Shaman, Worldly Tutor. These are all cards that go and say, I need this creature right now. I will find it.
Yeah.
And the other one, Elemental Kraj, is really cool too, because he can put a +1/+1 counter on something, and then now he has all activated abilities of that too.
Yep.
So it's kind of like a little bit of blue. He's becoming other
experiment
things.
Kraj.
But
Experimental
Kraj. That's what it is. And same with Edric. I love Edric because it allows me to play all my blue green stuff.
How could you not love
I'm
Edric?
A Prime Speaker Zagana guy myself.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well,
so many good, but look at that. How many good blue-green commanders are there? It's one of the most fun color pairings to play because you always have gas because blue will draw you cards, and you can always cast your stuff because green will give you the mana to do it.
Yeah. And I think to your point, like blue is still one of the best cards, one of the best colors in Magic, obviously, because of just the counterspell
ability. It's
still
the best color in
Magic.
It is.
Yeah. And, you know, counterspell alone allows you to handle anything that's coming your way. And then green on the other side is, I think, you know, for a long time, and I know there's arguments to be made against this, but it's kind of an EDH staple. It's a green was made for EDH, or EDH was made for green. You know, you need ramp. It's all these big creatures, all these big spells that do all these really impressive physical things that look really cool on a board state, you know, especially a big board state.
Genesis Wave, anybody?
Yeah, Genesis Wave, and, you know, all sorts of just huge green spells that you can cast that, you know, you never get to play when you're playing, you know, standard or draft or anything like that. But you play a game of BDH, and now all of a sudden you've got 30 mana, and you're, you know,
Genesis Wave. When, why win?
Yeah,
exactly.
Back when Primeval Titan used to be available, oh my goodness, it was just like green was you couldn't not play green.
Yeah.
Another thing we didn't mention as a strength of green is cheating of creatures into play. They're very good at See the Unwritten, Tooth and Nail, Genesis Wave you just mentioned,
Pattern of Rebirth.
There's just a ton of cheating of creatures directly into play. Yeah. So,
and Wizards is happy to keep reprinting that effect too, because I think it really, it's kind of hard to pull off correctly in a very competitive standard environment. But it's also very satisfying for the kinds of people that like to play that kind of deck.
I would say also that green is the color that is currently on the best trajectory as far as the direction that its power level's going.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the stated things that Wizards of the Coast is doing is making creatures better.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that throughout the history of Magic, there was a long period from the beginning to, I don't know, even 10 years in where creatures were just really weak and the game was mostly about spells. And then they've made a concentrated effort to make creatures better. Well, green's the creature color.
Yeah.
You know, it's the color that relies on creatures more than any other color. So moving forward, if your design is to make creatures better, well, then green's just naturally going to continue to get better.
Yeah.
And especially with this other trend that they seem to be doing of making the graveyard even more important. I mean, we've always seen that the graveyard is, you know, almost an extension of the hand in EDH and, you know, other forms of magic. But now with, you know, Sultai coming out as an official, you know, grouping and the those enemy pairs matching
delve,
up.
The delve mechanic. Yeah.
And it just seems like they're adding a lot of other ways to access your graveyard and get rid of it at the same time as well. But that seems very fun and very in tune with what green strategy is as well.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because if you look at Standard right now, like the big players are, hey, you guys need a mana dork? Sylvan Carry added. You want to get, like how many decks run Courser of Krufix? How many decks have Siege Rhino?
Yep.
I mean, people are splashing for green cards like Atarka. Like people are splashing an extra color just to get a giant dragon in their deck. And that just goes to show you how, I mean, Wizards, it makes sense, I think. It's more fun if you have creatures battling out instead of like, I'm going to have my Storm Counter 5. Here we go. Going to go off and just play Solitaire for a bit and hopefully win. You know, that's not Wizards' intention.
And it makes those wins that much more special too. Like you said, you know, if you play the same game over and over and over, eggs, and you're just...
Yeah,
you know, all my eggs are popping and I'm dealing damage to you and here, let's hope we don't go to time. And, you know, it's much more fun to be like, and I put out, I finally get my forest or, you know, my, you know, stomping grounds.
Well, it's like
Nissa
and like
boom.
All your, all my lands turn into giant little beaters. Yeah. Like, how much fun is that?
Another strength of green, turn my lands into dudes that can fight you.
Yeah, Titania, if you guys listen to that deck tech, is an amazing commander. What a great card.
So fun to play too.
Yeah. It's actually funny because talking about going to time with eggs, it's funny. The one deck that does go to time right now in Standard is actually our next allied pair, which is green white devotion.
Oh man. Yeah. They have 500 deck. Life. It in the mirror. It's like crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And I heard some, I mean, I was listening to Limited Resources or Constructed Resources and someone was saying like, yeah, he said he was playing as fast as he could and still went to time every round.
Yeah. It's like, just, what? Well, when the whole thing, when you're going to be at 500 life.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So the
so it's
allied,
called Selesnya.
Selesnya, yeah. It's the allied pair, our first allied pair of green and its left neighbor, white. And we talked about this earlier. Green is a very spiritual color, talking about the, you know, mother nature and all that. And white is the religion sort of devotion. We have monks. We have people looking at angels coming from the sky, you know. And there's also a lot of innovation here. And I read this. It's really interesting. Convoke. The mechanic where you're able to tap creatures to pay for a mana cost. So, for instance, if something costs 4 mana and you had 4 creatures out, you could tap all of them and you would pay for it, including the color of the creatures would pay for colored mana. Convoke was actually originally designed for red-white because it was all about... Richard Garfield imagined it. It was called something like Critter something else. There's some weird name for it. But Richard Garfield imagined it was like armies working together.
Right.
But it became Selesnya. And because I think they wanted to continue the idea of...
Red still has a little bit of it because
Stoke the Flames. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think,
but Convoke... if you think about what they're doing, you're sort of like kneeling and praying, and that's making mana appear, right? So your spiritualism, your religion is giving you power.
Yeah, exactly.
So that does feel like white and green.
Yeah. And also, it's the colors for populate, which is creating more tokens on the battlefield. So it makes sense that you'd be able to use these like they were mana dorks, essentially. Like they are all land war elves or whatever.
Well, think about like blue has that, guy that makes your artifacts, you can convoke artifacts.
Oh, right. Hadouken Sorcerer or some sort.
Whatever it's called, but it, of course, that's what blue does because they pray to technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, artifacts are the embodiment of technology in magic. So, you know, that's the only thing they can get out of it is technology, right?
Yeah, it's true. That card, by the way, is totally a Ben Bateman card.
Yeah.
It's got his name written all over it. Some of my favorite cards from Green White, Armadillo Cloak. I'm pretty sure you play this in a few of your decks, right, Craig?
Yeah, Trample and +2/+2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also Lifelink.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very
good.
So
there you go. Green is Trample, white is Lifelink. And voila, put them together, you've got a really good enchantment.
Sigarda. Wow.
Yep.
That is just an awesome phenomenal card. Maybe we'll get it in from the Vault Angels. Can we hope?
Oh, that'd be really cool.
Can we
hope? A little Sigarda? Yeah.
Because I hope they don't put Iona in there. And I don't want Limvala either.
Right.
So
you don't want
how about Sigarda? If you got to go with something that ends with an A, let's go with Sigarda. I guess Sarah ends with an A. Sarah Angel's in there
Sarah
for
Angel's
sure.
Sarah Angel's definitely in there,
yeah. Yeah, with New Art and something else. But
yeah.
Come on, Sigarda.
Sigarda, Host of Herons, if you don't know, is 2, a green and white for a 5/5. So 6 for a 5/5 is pretty good already. It's also flying. She's also hexproof, And I could end there.
Well, she's legendary, so you can have her as your commander.
You could end there and be like, great, she's the best commander ever. But she also says spells and abilities your opponents control can't cause you to sacrifice permanents. Like, that is the ultimate, I'm so devoted to the spiritual religion that you can't even cause me to get rid of stuff on my board.
Especially with the hexproof, and then all you have to do is add indestructibility to her in any form.
Yeah.
And she's almost
unstoppable.
Yeah. Like, especially with the clone thing being gone, and now with Terminus not even being able to affect her.
Yeah. I think tucking Sigarda was one of my few ways of just, because if Sigarda turned towards you and was like, you're done.
There's not much you can do. Yeah.
I mean, I hope
you have that Search Lighthouse or whatever.
Yeah, Arcane Lighthouse is a very special card to me. Thank you very much, Wizards, for printing that guy.
I like this next guy.
Who, Riss?
Riss.
Yeah.
Well, this is something we didn't talk about. So Celestia is also a very big token color pairing. Yeah. So the two colors that probably produce the most tokens are white and green, and then I'd say red is probably third. Mm-hmm.
And they're all allies.
And of course, white's about banding together, quote unquote banding, which was a white mechanic.
Right.
And that was original part of the color pie, was the idea that white likes a lot of things working in concert to defeat a big thing. So they didn't have a lot of big creatures. Now green likes a lot of growth, right? So those two things go together, because if I'm going to make a bunch of little creatures, I'm sort of growing it's the opposite of Golgari, right? Golgari is making one dude really big, and Celestia is making a lot of really small dudes.
Yep. So we have Riss the Redeemed, which is a heck of a card.
Awesome card.
You have, I feel like you have three decks for Riss, but you just have one, right?
I do. I have one Riss and one Sigarda, and Riss is obviously all tokens, and it's all the stuff that I can't run in Gave. It's all the stuff that didn't like make the cut for Gave.
So Riss is a hybrid. He's hybrid Celestia, so green-white, for a 1/1 legendary creature. He only costs one to put out, which is probably why it's also so great. For two and a hybrid Celestia, you can tap him to put a 1/1 green and white elf warrior creature token into play. And for four and two hybrid, you can tap him for each creature token, put a token into play that's a copy of that creature.
So you double your tokens.
Yeah, that you control specifically.
It's insane. It's six mana. However many tokens you've got, double it.
Yeah.
Especially, it's amazing, though, how I've played this deck a few times. You know, obviously, I've played this deck maybe 20, 30 times. And the amount of times that I've used that ability specifically, maybe in five games.
Really?
It's tough to get to, because you're trying to get all those tokens out there first, right?
Right.
I mean, you want, when you double it, obviously, you'd rather double 30 tokens than five, right?
Right, right.
You know, so, and you're like, oh, well, you know, for seven, man, I can do this.
Well, I think having him as your commander really makes people preemptively just keep wiping your board or doing what they can to keep that number down.
Yeah.
Because my token deck, I've done it more than five times, but Riss is not the commander. He's just in there. And so what I do is I have 10 tokens down, and then I make five more, and I look around, nobody does anything. And then the next turn, I pop him out and immediately do it.
Yeah, give him haste.
Yeah, Concordant Crossroads. And now all my tokens also have haste.
Right.
And that's, he's sort of like a Craterhoof Behemoth almost in that instant.
Yeah, the fact that he can, for the amount of mana, so let's say you put one to put him out, another six, so seven mana total.
Not
to
that
double,
many.
Yeah.
Double the amount of counters you have. Concordant Crossroads is out, or you have Anger in your graveyard.
Yeah,
you're
so
fine.
Eight, essentially.
And if you have Doubling Season out,
oh boy.
Quadruple the amount of counters, the amount of dudes or whatever. Or is it, would it be times three?
It
doubles them.
You'd have
doubles,
15, and then he'd make 15.
So
and then doubling,
so you would
make another 15. Yeah, so you get three times the amount that you started with.
Boy, I hope we're right about that one. Well, you let us know.
Yep.
So that's sort of, that's like green-white in a nutshell. Again, I think green-white's also one of the most powerful combinations for EDH, because you have some really iconic people as well. You have, what's her name? The captain of the Starship Weatherlight. Captain Sisse.
Yeah.
You know, able to search out a creature, a legendary creature.
It's a tutor on a stick. It's crazy.
She can just go grab Sigarda.
Legendary anything, right?
Yeah. She can grab lands that are legendary. Okay. She can grab Riss. She can grab Sigarda. Her deck is basically, that's the true Super Friends deck as far as I'm concerned.
Another thing about Celestia is they have the flicker mechanic.
Right.
So white can flicker stuff, and green is really good at enter the battlefield toolboxy effects.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that they do pretty well. And white has some utility creatures that have ETB effects.
Yeah.
So that's something that's recent to Magic that wasn't around back in the day, and that has made creatures a lot stronger. It's just this idea that they do an effect when they hit the table. So even if somebody kills them, they've already had an effect.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And then just being able to continuously do that is very strong.
And back to Jimmy's point with white being obviously a good complement to this, I think, you know, to what we were talking about earlier, blue is the best way to prevent something to coming onto the battlefield. But white, once it's on the battlefield, has the best toolbox for taking care of that.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a really good point. Because white is a really good pair. Because what is the thing we said green couldn't do? Wrath the board. What's white best at?
Wrathing the board.
And, removing things from the game, which is what you want to do in EDH. You don't want those being in the graveyard or even back in their library. If you just remove them from the game.
All right, so our last color pairing that we're going to talk about today is Gruul.
Green. I always imagine like a big orc.
What a
from
perfect
Lord of the Rings
name
singing.
For it.
Yeah. Gruul. It sounds like what everyone in green red also eats. They're just like, what's for breakfast? Gruul.
See? You even sound like an orc.
Yeah, it is perfect. So in green and red, the answer to pretty much every kind of threat now exists. I mean, it's similar for green and white for creatures, but red can get rid of lands. Red can do board wipes. Red sort of has, with the direct damage suite that they have, you can pretty much kill anything with green and red. Because it also red also, because it can't get rid of enchantments, green helps them out clearly with that.
And where these colors really line up is creatures that just hit really hard.
Yeah.
Because red is the color of creatures with big power, low toughness.
Mm-hmm.
And haste, and the color that gives haste. And so this combined with green is super powerful. Xenagos is such a great deck that we did a whole episode about. And it's all about giving something haste and making it huge.
Yep.
And that's what these two colors really do. It's the ultimate Timmy combination.
And this, I would also say it's one of the hardest to pilot because this draws a lot of aggro, clearly. Mm-hmm.
It's so scary.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, you can pump up a guy that's super hasty. Like, that's, in general, just seeing those colors is like, oh boy, watch out. And also, a lot of token generation in these colors.
Yeah, I'd say they're the second best token generating pair.
Yeah, like Dragon Broodmother is an insane card.
If that card was legendary, that'd be that would definitely be a general that I would run. I tried to run Throwmok for a long time, but it just, you know, and run basically what you guys were saying, token generation, and then consume them to make him huge, and then trample over stuff to, you know, try and drive the game home. But it's just, it's too easily targetable. You know, you have all your tokens, and then you swallow them up with him, and then somebody's like, I remove him from the game.
Yeah.
Boom, you're done.
Yeah, pretty much. Dragon Broodmother is also similar to Dragonlair Spider, where they just essentially put out tokens consistently. Dragon Broodmother's case, she actually puts tokens out that have Devour too. So when it comes into play, you can sacrifice any number of creatures, and it comes into play with twice that many +1/+1 counters on it. So they're essentially, it's like, hey, we're going to feed you. We're going to give you more food to get bigger and angrier and faster. And that's sort of the red-green way.
I think haste is so key to what this combination does, because green without haste is so much less scary than with haste. Haste with green is the freakiest thing because they have a ton of mana and they're liable to drop a Hydra Omnivore or something ginormous that does, you know, tons of damage. And if you don't have that safety of like, well, at least I get a warning because it'll sit there for one rotation of the table before they can attack with it.
Yeah.
That's what really pushes green into this.
Or, okay, I can block, you know, 5 of their 10 dudes, but if they have 20 dudes, now I can't.
And they might have 20 dudes with haste that I don't have time to prepare for.
Exactly,
you know?
Right.
So unless I have an instant speed board wipe, maybe everybody's dead. You know, that's
why Craterhoof is so good.
Yeah.
He's
got haste already.
And he's got haste already. It gives everyone else haste, yeah. A legendary creature is actually a deck that Alex Kessler built. By the way, Alex would also be a great... We'll try and bring him on for maybe blue, because Alex is... he really likes to sort of get in and indulge in the colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's great talking to him about who he thinks each Game of Thrones character is, because he really knows the color wheel really well, and the books, so he's able to really pinpoint it down. And you would think like some of the obvious answers are there, but if you actually think about it, no. They're very complex.
Wouldn't Khaleesi be Dragon Broodmother?
Yeah, I feel like she's green-red because she fosters a community around her.
I mean, she's
her,
Kalia.
She's Kalia, but...
But really, she's the broodmother.
Yeah, exactly.
She's making dragons, and she's feeding them, and they're getting huge.
I'd find
and then
it
they're
hard...
burning, burninating the countryside.
I'd find it hard to get white for Khaleesi because she's so, you know, violent with her
but
ways.
But she is orderly.
Yes, it's
true. You know, she's creating order. she's stopping slavery.
You could
try to bring justice.
Green potentially for creating order, but
no,
yeah.
Green doesn't like order. Green is about nature and
well,
it's about
natural order, sort of.
Yeah, but it doesn't like rules and laws. It,
right.
It, you know, a tiger should be able to eat a deer. Nobody should come in and make a law that the tiger's not allowed to eat the deer. You know, that's so it's about natural order. You're right.
True. Yeah. All right. So the commander for Gruul would be Berberigamos in
that's what I call him.
Yeah. Every time this guy hits
he's
the
just
table,
a Murloc.
It's just
like the bird from Up.
I love that character.
Kevin.
It's a 4/2 red and 2 green.
Squirrel.
So, squirrel. 8 total. And it's a 7/6 Cyclops. Trample. Whenever Berberigamos Enrage deals combat damage to a player, reveal the top 3 cards of your library. Put all land cards revealed this way into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. And discard a land card. This creature does 3 damage to target creature or player. So there you go.
There are lots of combos where you just get enough lands in your hand and kill everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he deals damage and then he does kind of actually outside of the color high a little bit, this sort of like kind of brainstorming effect where you look at the top cards of your library and put any relevant ones in your hand. Actually, it's more of a sort of like you know, any of the Delve Enablers from
Dig Through Time.
He just dumps stuff in the graveyard and puts stuff in your hand, so he's technically card draw, but he also can load up your waste bin with
and the
like
huge
anger.
The huge combo with him is once you get Life from the Loam, it's like
yep,
oh yeah.
Now you instead of drawing, you go for the Life of the Loam. You draw bring three. Back, yeah. You bring back those lands that you just ditched. Now you have 3 more and
yeah,
rinse and repeat.
Basically kill everything that doesn't have hexproof too, because it's like, oh, he's at 6 toughness? Just discard 2 lands.
You just get Dictate of the Twin Gods and other damage doubling effects out, and then you just kill everybody with just like, I'll drop 3 lands and do, you know, 27 damage to you.
Yeesh. Oh, sounds about right. And that does it for the color pairings for the allied and the enemy colors. Now, there are also these things called shards and wedges. And we'll go in depth to these in a future episode because we don't want to. We would be here for another hour if we started talking about those because they're actually way more complex than just the allied colors.
I think also like we're just getting away from what green is when you're doing that.
Yeah.
In fact, a shard is more about the 2 colors that aren't in it than the 3 that are in it, right? Because that's
correct.
That's
if you look at a card, the way to determine what a shard is take green and it's right a shard. Yeah. Oh, so close. To determine what a shard is for green, if you look to its right, it has red, and to its left, it has white. And if you cut a triangle out of it, it's a shard of the whole, the color.
It's pentagon. A color and it's 2 allies.
Yeah. And a wedge is if you take the 2 enemy colors and you have a pizza wedge down the middle of the pentagon, which is how I like
it. So it's a color and it's 2 enemies.
Yeah. So what we'll talk about those in depth later, but Josh is right. It's getting away from the essence of the color, and right now we're talking about why green is what it is and how it helps. And that's why we're at the most exciting part, how to use green best in EDH. There's obviously lots of ways, and we've talked about them all episode, but we'll just quickly go over it again here.
These 4 are really concise and all exactly spot on.
Yeah. Ramp, ramp, ramp. Get lots of mana. Tutor for creatures and cheat them into play. Put stuff in the graveyard and recur it or grow it back and overrun. Just run over them until they can't.
Just suddenly
anymore.
Pump all my creatures to a ginormous size and then attack with trample.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even without trample, just have enough of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, my favorite part about each of these episodes in deck techs is cards you might not think of. So Mark Rosewater doesn't actually have control over every part of the design team. Some products like the Commander 20, 13, and 14 products, some of the cards slip by him, and he's been public about how he doesn't like some of the cards in these sets because he thinks they violate the color pie. So we'll see if you guys think the same. What do you guys think about Song of the Dryads?
Yeah, Song of the Dryads is 2 in a green. It turns a permanent, or it turns a...
Enchant a permanent, and enchant a permanent is a colorless forest land.
Yeah, so it just turns one of their permanents into a forest.
Mm-hmm. At sorcery speed, notably.
Right, so it doesn't... It doesn't. A lot of people out there. This is bugging me. I'm going to say this really quick.
Mm-hmm.
When the Tuck rule happened, and there was a whole bunch of like people out there going, "No, just use Song of the Dryad, or just use pacifism, or just use." Those are not the same as Tuck stuff. Chaos Warp, Oblation. Those cards are instants. There's a huge difference between an instance and a sorcery because let me just give you this scenario. I cast Rafik. I put Lightning Greaves on it. What are you doing with Song of the Dryads? Sadly staring at it because it does nothing. And by the way, Rafik now has, you can't target him and he's got haste. So he just bashed you in the face and probably killed you.
Yeah.
Whereas Chaos Warp or Ablation saves you in that same spot. So those are not replacements to me. But the reason Rosewater, understandably, I think, doesn't like this card because it's outside the color pie is that this is more of a blue type effect.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly...
like a reduce in stature, change what you are fundamentally to something else.
Yeah, because what is blue going to do? Like, what do we say?
It's like a polymorph, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're a tree. You're not a... you can't turn into a butterfly later.
Yeah.
You might evolve, but you're not going to change basically what you are. So changing a Jace into a tree, that's just not something green does.
Yeah, and you would... it, right, at first appearance, though, it's like, no, it's he's joining nature again. It's like, no. Green's not about changing something into... like, green's about something what it not, is born yeah. as... into the world as, and that's what it stays at. Not the ability to just magically make them into something else.
Right. It might evolve. It might grow.
Magic trickery.
You know, a caterpillar might turn into a butterfly, but that's a natural order of how things go. A caterpillar doesn't turn into a tiger, and it also doesn't turn into a tree. So that's I totally get it. Which, by the way, these are the cards you really look out for and play them because. Yep. They're covering a weakness, right? So Song of the Dryads is a card that basically gets rid of any... it reaches out and gets rid of a creature, a planeswalker, you know, and an artifact enchantment, which green could already do.
Mm-hmm.
But so green doesn't have a lot of redundancy for this type of effect. Like we said earlier, it can't really just reach out and kill a creature without a fight card.
Yeah.
So...
and I think when they developed these monocolored EDH sets, you know, I think they knew that each obviously color had its own weaknesses to begin with, but I think it really kind of drew to attention how few answers there are in green, which is
why they reprinted Beast Within twice.
Yeah, you know, I think Song of the Dryads is absolutely necessary for mono green, just because I've played a mono green deck before, and it's you have no answers to flying. You know, you have very few answers to flying. You have very few answers to, you know, spot removal, things of that nature. And
killing a planeswalker without just hitting it in the face, like Song of the Dryads turns, again, the planeswalker into a forest, or Beast Within can destroy a planeswalker and put a beast on the battlefield. These are all really powerful because they kind of violate the color pie.
And these are the type of cards to look out for, is just cards. So usually you look in early Magic, before the color pie was truly implemented the way it is now. Mm-hmm. You look in Time Spiral Block, Planar Chaos.
The whole point of those blocks was to violate the color pie, essentially.
Planar Chaos was all about, violating the color pie. And then Time Spiral was about time-shifting stuff. So there's all these effects that just, like, maybe green can't do it yet or whatever. And then you look in a commander product because the commander team is developing things like Chaos Warp, Song of the Dryads, things that are really outside of what the color pie should be doing because they're trying to make commander as a format viable.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I agree with it, but... you know, it's something that they're doing, and if they're going to do it, well, we're going to play Song of the Dryad.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's ultimately not the worst thing in the world. Obviously, it's not a trend that we should be following and, like, falling into, if that makes sense. We shouldn't just be like, well, we did it once, we can do it again, because that will quickly spiral out of control.
Well, and that's the worry, right? Because I feel like the game is one of the, maybe the main reason it's great is because of color separation.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more you talk about and get into what color separation is and what the color pie is, the more you realize how intrinsic it is to the game of Magic.
Yeah.
And so things like Song of the Dryads, while useful in your mono green deck that you didn't have before and is a tool you needed, they do fundamentally sort of weaken the base of the game in some way. And it's fine for one card or two cards, but it's like you were saying, if they keep doing this and they do it to a large enough extent, then... before we know it, there would be no reason to play two colors together.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason to make those choices. And then the game's not interesting at all. It's more like Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! And I'm really speaking from no knowledge here. So what I perceive about those games, and this may or may not be true.
I think Pokemon is a little more evolved at this point, but Yu-Gi-Oh! You may have a...
where like just the top 50 cards are just played in every deck.
Right.
You know, and that's not true in Magic because you have to make choices about color.
Mm-hmm.
And then that informs what those cards are. And so... you know, you can't play Stoneforge Mystic in every deck. It's awesome in decks that it's in, but if you don't have white, and then you can't play it at all.
Yeah.
So, and that's really important to the game.
Yep. Another card that is from Time Shifted that I think is not played enough is Avoid Fate. Have you guys seen this card? It's a green instant that says counter target instant or aura spell that targets a permanent you control.
Yeah.
It's a green counter spell, and it's almost
no one will ever see that coming, by the way.
Yeah, I holding up one green, yeah. Like, what are you gonna do, like make your guy bigger? It's like, no, I'm gonna counter your path to exile. It's like, you're gonna do what? Yeah, bind is a similar card that counters a target activated ability and also draws you a card. And another card that I really liked, Scarwood Bandits.
I don't even know this card. What is this?
2/2 green, has forest walk for a 2/2 bandits, summon bandits. It's from the dark.
Should know this card then. It's from early Magic.
2/2 green, tap, take control of target artifact.
Oh, yeah.
An opponent may counter this by paying 2, and you lose control of the artifact if this guy leaves play or at the end of game, as the card says.
Oh, dude, I got one better. Willow Satyr from Legends. He's 2 green and 1 other, I believe.
Right.
And maybe just, 2 green and 2 other.
For he's a 1/1, yeah, and you can just tap him to...
Take a legend. Take a legendary permanent, like a legendary creature, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's, hey, somebody's commander. I tap him, and now I have it.
That's cool. The nice thing about Scarlet
Bandits...
Which
is so blue, but, you know...
Yeah, it's super blue.
Yeah.
They figured at the time they were giving every ability to blue, so they might as well give blue's ability to some of the others.
Yeah, right. this weird, like, hairy dude, too. It's
yeah,
like...
exactly.
So what were we saying? Those are early Magic sets where the color pie wasn't as you know, stringent
keep
as
your
it is
eye
now.
Out.
So that's where you look. Yeah.
Scarwood Bandits is nuts though, because
they're bandits, dude. They're stealing stuff.
Yeah, but
why are they green? I don't know.
I don't know.
They're they're Robin Hood.
I guess
they
so.
Live in Sherwood Forest.
Yeah.
And they're stealing from the rich and giving to presumably you, the poor.
The funny thing about this card is that it can actually untap and do it again.
Yeah, just keep doing
which
it.
Which is insane.
They just have to leave mana open.
The sad thing is you can't ever steal a Sol Ring because they'll just tap it in response.
What if it's tapped?
Oh, snap. Then you get it.
Yep. You either make it so they can never tap their Sol Ring.
Right. Threat of just stealing it each time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can still do this and you don't take control of it if they pay 2, but you can be like, eh, whatever.
I'll just cost you 2 mana.
Cost you 2 mana, yeah. Which is pretty hilarious. You do it on their upkeep. You're like, no, I wanted to tap this during my main phase. Like, sorry, buddy. So let's wrap things up here. Let's talk about some personal favorite commanders in green. I want people to build decks around my ideas because I don't see enough decks around Yisan the Wandering Bard.
Oh, Yisan would be really cool. Yisan is doing sort of a weird birthing prod impression.
Yeah, so he's 2/2 green and he's a 2/3 human rogue, and you 2/2 green to tap him, and you put a verse counter on him, and you can search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of verse counters on him. So you essentially get a 1-drop the first time, a 2-drop the second time, a 3-drop, unless you have a way to double those counters.
It's kind of like an Aether Vial, where you kind of grow it to the point where then you're cheating guys out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's cool because I feel like it's a total build around me. You would have like 10 1-drops, you know.
Well, and you get some things that untap it, mm-hmm. so you can use it multiple times.
Put more counters on it. You get to choose how many counters go on it.
What are we always saying? Cheating mana cost is one of the most powerful things you can do in the history of Magic. In fact, probably the single most powerful thing is cheating of mana cost. Yeah. So this guy cheats mana cost.
Oh, yeah.
So,
hardcore.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty cool.
Pretty cool guy, yeah.
I mean, I like Titania, obviously. That deck is super fun. If you haven't listened to the Titania episode of ours, go look through our archives and check that out. That deck is a ton of fun to play.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying it's the most powerful of decks that I have, but it does crazy things like draw 25 cards in a turn and put out, you know, 55 threes. So that's pretty fun.
And always has action. That's when I played, I was like, wow, I'm never dead in the water. I'm always able to do something, which is really
Unless
cool.
Unless they steal Titania and you don't have Homeward Path or something. Ugh. If they steal it with
then you Song of the Dryads or, oh, wait.
Yeah.
No.
If they steal it with an enchantment, you might be good. But if they steal it with, like, Desertion or something.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, okay, that's it. Deck is done.
Then,
it's worse than getting it tucked. Because at least in green, if something gets tucked, You can go get
it out,
but Desertion's like the end of that deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Craig, you have any favorite greenies?
I'd say probably like 3. So if you're going mono green, I would go with Omnath. If you're like my purely favorite deck that I play that uses green and has to do with like the regrowth stuff is Caridor.
Wait, it doesn't have to do with the infect stuff?
No, actually, I'm not even going to leave Infect in there at all.
No, I mean your favorite one doesn't have Infect. That seems crazy.
That is crazy, Craig.
And most of my decks have some sort of like,
is some Infect
grafted
in
exoskeleton or something.
It's a great out though. It's like, hey, you weren't going to win this game any other way. Have an Infect guy in there. Just one, you know, grafted exoskeleton is totally win condition.
I'm pretty sure Craig has grafted exoskeleton
in almost every deck. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you know, if you just feel like playing green, just try tokens of any sort, you know, whether it's Prosh or whether it's Riss or whether it's Gave. There's a lot of different fun variations of tokens that you could do that are just so much fun to be able to make a bunch of things and then make them bigger. And it's a very engaging way to play.
Yeah. Tweet at us at CommandCast if you guys have any sort of unconventional or just fun green deck builds that you have, whether it's mono green, three colors, five colors, who cares? If it's centered around green, let us know and tweet at us and we will retweet you and start the conversation.
We all love conversation.
That we do. All right, let's wrap things up. Go and read Mark Rosewater's articles. They cover all of this stuff. He's very well written, and he's written so much about it. He knows these colors super deeply. He really knows what he's talking about. And, you know, start experimenting with the different allied or enemy colors. You know, learn. The point of this series is so that you can learn how to use the right parts of each color in your deck to get what you want out of the color combination you have. So, like, think of each color as, like, an ingredient to a dish. And if your dish can only use a couple of colors and needs a certain spice or something, figure out, you know, what combo of cards or what you need to do to stretch outside the color pie to lead you to the best tasting dish you can.
Please share any interesting finds that you guys find, especially with the old sets, because obviously we all look through some of the old stuff when we're building a new deck. So
yeah, exactly.
Love to hear what you guys find.
Yeah, definitely. And this is just a really fun conversation to have. This is like talking shop. I could do this all day, you know. It's great. Anyway, that's it. We're going to move on to the end step where we talk about something outside the world of Magic. I didn't think of anything this week.
Craig, you got anything cool you've been up to outside of the world of Magic?
I mean, I just started watching Game of Thrones and Silicon Valley again. I'm pretty pumped about that.
Silicon Valley, that show is great. I saw the first episode for the first time and it was great.
Yeah, that show's hilarious, dude. I watched the whole first season.
It's funny.
It's
great.
Really yeah. funny. And season two is starting out in a great place. I really like where they're going with it.
Plus, if you've ever been up to Palo Alto, like,
it's exactly what it's like.
It really is.
Yeah. It's pretty hilarious. That show is great. HBO is just killing it with content. Let's not kid around. Make sure you guys, if you have an Apple TV, by the way, you don't need a cable connection anymore. You can just straight up pay a monthly subscription.
HBO Go.
Yeah, it's great. HBO Now, I think is what they call it.
Oh, sorry, they changed it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, whatever. Rebranded.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, Craig, where can we find you on Twitters?
At Craig Blanchett.
Cool, cool, cool. And you also, of course, do the web series Top Decking, which is about Magic. We'll put all those links, of course, below. Shout out to our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, at the MMCast. Follow those guys. They're awesome. Their content's great. And Modern is just getting bigger and better by the day.
Well, yeah, now's the time to really pay attention to Modern because we're going to have a Modern season. We're going to have Modern Masters 2015.
Yeah.
We're going to all be in Vegas.
Yep, and we're going to have more details about that next episode, or do you want to talk about it now?
Really quick, we'll just hit it here, and we'll talk about it a little more next episode, but we are planning a gathering. If you're on the fence or are definitely going to Vegas, just know that the Thursday night, which is the 28th of May, is tentatively when we're going to have our little EDH gathering.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get an idea of how many of our listeners are planning on being there that night and can make it. We will have it someplace, you know, we're thinking about finding a venue on the strip or just off it, so it won't be hard to get to. But we want to know, get some idea of about how many people might make it. So
yeah,
let us know. Email is probably the best way for this one. You can tweet at us. But I would suggest email just because it's easier for us to keep track of.
Yeah, totally.
But we're really excited to hang out with everybody, play a lot of EDH, draft some mashup conspiracy. We're gonna have prizes to give away. WotC Wizards has sent us a whole ton of Dragons of Tarkir stuff. We've got boxes. We've got fat packs. We've got
playmats.
We got deck.
I have Funko Pop figures. We still haven't given away. Lots of really cool stuff. Yeah.
So
let us know if you're going to Vegas for real. I need to know.
We want to know just to be able to plan this thing. We hope there's a lot of you there. We really want to meet everybody. And since I gave away all my political tricks last week, I'm pretty sure I'm just going to get stomped the whole time, which will be fun too.
I can't wait. Make sure you guys listen to the next episode too. We're going to talk about EDH etiquette or EDH etiquette. I don't know how to say it together.
EDH etiquette.
EDH etiquette with Craig as well. And that's coming out on Thursday. So until next time, everybody. See you later.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, Whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.